Father, we pray now that you will touch each of our hearts on the thing that we need at this hour. In Jesus' name, amen. What I'd like to do in the outset is pass out these cards. Take about three guys and pass them out. And I would like for you to write a question about what you would like out of this hour. Any question on lasting for the long haul. I'm sure you understand the what we're talking about. How to make it for the long haul. In other words, how to be motivated for Christ when you're real old, like 36, 37, and such as that, see? No smiles in here. I guess we do have young people. Take that and write a question now on any question that you have on making it for the long haul. Just print it out. Yeah, why don't you give yourself one? You don't have to. You don't put your name on that. Just any question. We'll take just a moment. So I'll just click this off while we're doing that. I asked him what his attitude was about being old, and his suggestion was, or his thought was, if I knew I was going to live this long, I'd have taken better care of myself. And so in case you do live long, you want to take care of yourself. Now, there's only God's grace that we're able, any of us, able to make it. And there's two, I'll just give you two basic principles, then we'll read the cards and we'll have interaction here, I trust. One of the basic principles is we need to lay out our life realizing that there are seasons. And at the close, I'll give you a little article, one-page article on seasons of life. And the seasons of life, I've compared them to spring, summer, autumn, and winter. And so to make it for the long haul, we have to keep that in the background, that there are seasons of life, that you do different things in the spring, and in summer, and autumn, and winter. And I compare it to the farmer, because the farmer, to be successful, he keeps the seasons in mind. He acts differently in spring than he does in the autumn. He has different tools in the spring than he does in the autumn. He would plant his cotton in the spring, but if he went out in the autumn with a cotton planter, he'd wreck everything and scatter his crop and wouldn't harvest it at all. So he has to have some basic information that life is going along in its seasons, and different than the farmer. We only have one season. Life only goes around once for us. And then comes autumn, and then comes winter, and that's all she wrote. So we have to keep that in mind. Spring is preparation, and we need to discuss things that we need to do in the spring of our life. So let me throw this open for discussion now. The spring of our life. Let's talk about or suggest some of the things that should be done in the spring of our life. First, what would you call the spring of life? What age is about? What age? What grouping?
Under 30.
Pardon?
Under 30 years.
Under 30? That's good. Under 30 is spring of life. Is that close enough? Under 30? Varies. What are some of the things that should be looked after in the spring of life?
Salvation.
Salvation? That's for sure.
Preparation.
Preparation. I'll turn it up. Yeah, turn it up.
Uh-huh.
Okay, I got it now.
Schooling.
Schooling. By and large, what school you're going to get is going to be done in the spring of life. Any problem on that at all? They even have cutoff dates. What's cutoff dates in the academy? Air Force Academy or any of the academies?
28 years.
28? Is that it? Cutoff? See, so if you don't go get to the academy before you're 28, then you have to do something else. See, that, you know, that's where they run it. That's the spring of life. What are some of the other things that should be done in the spring of life? Pardon?
Establishing some basics.
Establish some basics, that's right. We should start. We should start in the spring of life. We should start. And those who haven't been privileged to start in the spring of life on various things suffer accordingly or reap accordingly.
Get a foundation of ethics.
Foundation of ethics. Values. The beginning in the spring of life. Values. This is the reason why it's so important for children under the age of five to be training. See, we are absolutely, you know politically where I'm standing, awful feist. See, the doctors and psychologists and psychiatrists tell us that from 1 to 5, you learn a heavy percentage of what you're going to learn from 1 to 5, you see. And then we relegate that to hired help, to people who don't want the job, to people who are lower-salaried people for various and sundry reasons, usually because of lack of capacity. Most people who have those jobs are not trained. Some have them because they love children and they love it. But by and large, it's people in the lower category of earning that we relegate the most precious thing in life, which is our children, from 1 to 5, 1 to 6, you see. Any comment? See how devastating that can be? John Claude Keeley, the skier, John Keeley. You know, it said that if you're not real good on the slope by the time you're 7 years old, you'll never be in international competition. You just won't. See? You just won't. That's the way things are. I didn't design them. I just read about them. Some people discover them. So you got the spring of life with your education. You got the spring of life with your physical ability. I've worked with men all my life, and I find that fellas who build up their physical ability, when they had a good exercise program of sports and what have you, when they're young in their teens and early 20s, then they're stout. They can hold out in later life. They don't get hurt so much, and they can walk across a pheasant field, not get tired.
Not when they're chasing you.
Pardon, Dad?
Not when they're following you.
Not when they're
following.
The spring of life. Education. And it's wonderful to become saved in the spring of life. It's really wonderful. That's all right. Well, I didn't know I was preaching that hard. preach so hard, the signs fell off the wall. Boy, man, where were we?
Get saved in the spring of life.
Spring of life. Get saved in the spring of life. Thank you. Any other comments on the spring of life? Okay, summer. What should be our major interests and activities in summer?
Growing.
Growing, right. What else?
Cultivating weeds.
Cultivating. Be sure we get those weeds. In a little article there, you know, if you get the weeds, I'm background and raised on the farm in Alabama. I really am a cotton picker. I mean, that was a joke, I hope, but my father and grandfather were cotton pickers. But if you get those weeds, if you get those weeds in June and July in a crop in this part of the world, you know, you virtually don't have very many weeds in your garden. You have a few weeds that grow, but not very much. They don't grow in August and September and October just like they do in spring, although it's quite warm. But if you've got those weeds, you can cultivate that crop. There's only a specific time in farming where you really need to concentrate on getting those weeds. And if you get those weeds in, you virtually are home free, really. It isn't all that difficult. But timing is tremendously important. And in case you haven't done something in the spring of your life, you still have a bit of time in the summer. You can plant a late crop. I was out in the country the other day, and a fellow had just planted his wheat, and I heard El Reno, and it came a flood. 9 days later, 2.5 inches of rain, and just flooded it, and he was planting it again. But he'd be all right. You can plant a late crop. If you get right on it, you can pick it up in the summer. If you don't have your proper education, you can get it. See, But what happens in school is, so oftentimes fellas lollygag around, sometimes they're not saved, and maybe they get their college, and then they get married, and then they get down to business, and then they put friend wife in the harness and in the traces to go to work, and then he goes back to grad school, see? And he's building foundation blocks in his life out yonder that's going to cost him a mint, Tiger. It's going to cost you a penny. It's going to cost a pretty penny, see? Because you begin to build foundations that's going to crumble later on because you lollygagged around for various and sundry reasons in those early days of your life. Either intentionally or unintentionally, it doesn't really make a difference. That freeway that fell, intentionally or unintentionally, doesn't really make a difference. It fell because it wasn't strong enough to withstand that particular pressure. And we all weep and cry, but hoping won't do it. It's either strong or it's not strong. And that particular thought right there we don't like, but that's the way it is. So in the summer of life, you got to check on things. Be sure that it's foundation. Autumn. Autumn is we need to secure our holdings. But you got to keep in mind as you get on into the autumn of your life, you're not in demand, say with your jobs, like you are in the summer of your life. You're not in demand. You get on toward 50, and there's certain kind of jobs you can get. President of university and those kind of jobs, you know, if you're qualified. In fact, that's what they're looking for. President of the United States, it'd be best if you're well into your 50s, maybe 60 or so, see? But there's just one or two of those jobs, you see. If you go on that route, fine, congratulate you. But for the rank and file, transferring, because they give early retirement around 50, they're trying to, you know, so you've got to keep this nitty-gritty thing in mind that you've got to get a hold of your life vocationally and spiritually in these younger days, if at all possible. You have to pay the price. Now, winter. Winter is the time when we should be able to enjoy the fruits of our labor. We should be able to enjoy the fruits of our labor. Don't be tempted to lollygag around and take it easy in the spring and summer. And of all the places we shouldn't lollygag around is in autumn when there's harvest to be done. Because the grain is ripe and you reap the golden grain, you don't reap the white grain. Scripture says the field is white unto harvest. White grain is past the ideal time of harvesting. Golden is when you should harvest it. When it begins to turn white, you're going to lose a lot of it, and the field's going to shake off when the combine comes through. And from my experience and testimony is, it's well worth the time to pay the price and the disciplines in the spring and the summer, because it's just so enjoyable in the autumn and winter. It's just absolutely great if you got it made. Second thing I want to keep in mind is balance. Okay, questions or comments or yes, Dan.
In the winter of life, are you referring to retirement? Is that what you're talking about?
I'm referring to harvesting. I'm referring to enjoying and the harvesting. I'm referring to those years in which you enjoy your walk in Christ, when you enjoy the fruit of your labor, of your vocation, not necessarily sitting on a rocking chair and going fishing, no, but the time when you can really enjoy and in your walk with the Lord, and particular time when you can spend time with the grandkids, or spiritually, a particular time when you spend time with young people and help them. And all you've got to do now is just help young people. All you got to do is help young people, because you don't have to prepare to save for college for your own kids anymore. You know, you don't have to prepare to have your chase your pastor, to have your church and build your church. See, you reach a place where you really can enjoy and be used of God to help young people with no strings attached. Younger people. That's winter. Yes.
John, on this issue of balance, I didn't write the question down because it was hard to put in one simple sentence. But how do you tell difference between balance, righteous balance, and wondering now, should I be doing more? Should I be, am I compromising on some of these things because I'm striving to keep a balance?
The question is, how do you determine between righteous balance and how do you, and what should you compromise on?
Or pull back the pace on.
All right. When God gave us a mind, Doss Trotman used to say, when God gave us a mind, He gave us a lot of leading. So, let's say you're in university, and maybe undergraduate or graduate school, and so on. Opportunities come, and with you and me, opportunities come as we lead young people into a tremendous ministry. And opportunities are there. But they also are there in university to get their degree in a certain amount of education. So in my thought pattern, their degree is priority simply because if they weren't there, they wouldn't have an opportunity to minister. That's real in depth. You follow that? See? If you weren't in Norman to go to school, you wouldn't be in Norman. You'd be back in Chicago someplace. So if you flunk out of school, you won't stick around for the ministry. You'll go back to Chicago. So you lose your education and your ministry. Am I communicating? Probably all too clear, huh? So a student has to keep in mind that he must get on with his education, with his proper grades. Or let's say he's an undergraduate, he wants to get into grad school. If you don't make certain grades, you know, that he won't get the program that he likes. So he has to keep that in mind. Realizing that there will be a time when he can harvest in a much greater fashion. You say, well, the Lord might come and he might not live. That is not my job. That's not my responsibility. See, be careful about getting over somebody else's responsibility. God's responsibility on how long you live, and God's responsibility is a rule, not always. God's responsibility in when Jesus comes and so on. The reason I say as a rule, because we can shorten our life. Ecclesiastes 7:17, be not overmuch wicked, neither be thou foolish. Why shouldest thou die before thy time? You can die before your time. You can get out here on a motorbike without a headgear, and you can shorten it up pretty fast. Statistics say that you will. They give you 9 years, you know, before you rack it up. So by and large, though, it's God's responsibility. So make the decision in the light of your whole life, and your whole life being 70 years. God gives you 80, fine. That's according to the Bible. Any other question? Yes?
Do you have a specific time frame that you're thinking of for spring and autumn and winter?
Yes. Well, about, we just talked about that, about 30, about, if you're going to the academy, it's 28, see?
But what about the other times in your life?
Okay, what would you like to do for the spring, for the summer?
30 to 55 seems to be kind of the summertime. I'm told that's the most productive years.
30 to 55? In your earlier, it was probably 28 to 50. It's lengthening now a little. People matured earlier, yesteryear, and they shut it down earlier. They matured a lot earlier. I would guess. Varies for different people. And there's always exceptions, you see. Any other questions? Yes.
What if the man gets saved when he's 50 and messes out on the spring of life?
Yes, okay, so that's a good question. He begins to shorten up his seasons awful fast, don't he? He does. Now, some of the things that he doesn't need to worry about, because whatever he's done vocationally, he's got it underway, right? Mm-hmm. But so now then, we need to help him tremendously make up the hedge and stand in the gap awful fast. We had a fella named a boy opened up to work in Australia. What was his name? Somebody help me. He's dead now. I call him Griffin. Jack Griffin. Jack Griffin wasn't saved till he was 47. And he absolutely hooked it on awful fast. And he was about equivalent of an eighth grade education, but he'd educated himself. He was in the parts business, automobile parts business, and a crook and a liar. And he got saved, and one of the first things it did, God cleaned him up from lying, because someone would call him up and say, "Hey, Jack, what about those parts?" And he says, "You know, I believe the boys have got those packages, and they hadn't even started making them yet." You know, he'd lie, just like we do now, you know, call them up and lie. And they told old Jack, Glockner went down, and so he thought, they told him, "What you got to do is get on university and start a ministry," because in those days, you know, that's what you did. So he got him a suit and went over to university. And the only people he could talk to were grad students, because the rest of the kids had to study, but the grad students had a little time, they were doing their research. And lo and behold, if he didn't lead to Christ and disciple about six graduate students that turned out to be PhDs, and that's the basis of the work in Australia. Jack Griffin, he's with the Lord now. So he was able to make up the difference. Let me bring in one more subject, and maybe we can provoke some questions. The next subject is balance. Luke 2:52. Jesus increased in wisdom and stature and in favor with God and man. Four basic categories. Wisdom, that's intellect; stature, physical; God, spiritual; man, social. Wisdom. Well, we need to study and keep studying and keep training. Stature. We need to develop physically and keep in shape. But keep in mind, we don't come back like we used to. The other day I was working with some fellas, and I'm up on a ladder, and a good friend of mine that I do Bible study, a mature man, but a couple years younger than me, he told me, he said, "John, I heard you were up on that extension ladder." I said, "You did? Who told you that?" So he told me who told me. And he said, "John, I don't want to hear you up there again, because old bones don't heal like young bones. You know, what do you got to prove? So I'm going to be careful about my extension ladders, you see, because old bones don't heal like young bones. It isn't the fact that you're afraid or a sissy or you lost your equilibrium, but you got to use wisdom. I mean, you know, we're trying to prove as you begin to mature. But do keep in shape. God, keep up the disciplines. Keep out of sin. Ecclesiastes 10:1. Dead flies cause the ointment of the apothecary to bring forth a stinking savor. So doth a little folly him that is reputation of wisdom and honor. That's King James. I love that. Stinking savor. The ointment of the apothecary. You know what apothecary is? What's apothecary?
Chemist
or drugstore. Yeah. Dead flies in the ointment of the apothecary bring forth a stinking savor. It doesn't smell good. So doth a little folly him that is in reputation for wisdom and honor. As you begin to mature in life, you have to act a part. You really do. I mean, ladies can't, as they mature, they can't act like high school kids or college kids. They really can't. It costs too much. You can't dress like high school kids and college kids. High school kids and college kids can get by with it. But we can't do that. So keep in mind in our that keeping up the discipline. Man, what's your testimony? Providing for honest things, 2 Corinthians 8:21, not only in the sight of the Lord, but also in the sight of men. Walk before God. You know, we have this question sometimes, particularly young people get converted, and they say, "Well, I just don't care what man thinks. I'm going to follow God." Well, we better care what men think. Paul did. Providing for honest things, not only in the sight of the Lord, but also in the sight of men. Walk before man, because man is very important. Jesus dressed like everybody else. And so they were going to get him one day, and he just walked right out through the crowd, and they lost him. When Judas came, he said, "Now it's the one that I embrace. That's the one." Why? Because they'd have got him mixed up with some of those other guys. I'm sure they'd have thought, maybe Andrew, they say he was a big fellow. They probably thought Andrew was Jesus because he was big and he was tall, you know. Big. Or maybe some of the other guys. But no, he looked just like everybody else. Isaiah 52 said he was a comely person. He was just he wasn't a comely person. He wasn't a beautiful person. Not more beautiful than anybody else, according to Isaiah 52. So he just looked like everything. So in regard to our testimony, to keep out of trouble, just, you know, keep the balance in regard to our testimony before man. Now these two things, to me, are the basics in making it for the long haul. One is there are seasons in life and you know when to do what. Two, there's a balance in life. Okay? Questions? On that.
One group.
Okay. How do you deal with stress as you try to juggle responsibilities, family, ministry, job, and so forth? That is absolutely a fantastic question. I mean, we all do it, don't we? I have been stretched out a number of times. In fact, a few periods in my life, when I was 50 years old, I cried all day my 50th birthday. Cried all day long. I had a responsibility in headquarters at Glen Eyrie, and I was building a rifle shed. I had some fellas building it, old rotten boards, and I thought to myself, boy, I really haven't accomplished all much in life. Here I am building a rifle shed where the young people could lay down and shoot their rifles, you know, out of some old used lumber, old rotten board. And I thought, boy, I haven't even progressed enough in life to use new lumber. And Mr. Ward came by and he said, what's the problem? I said, well, Gene, I thought I'd be further along at 50. He said, well, that's the most stupid thing in the world I ever seen to cry over. Because you can't measure it, John. You really can't. But here I was stretched out. And then when I was in New Zealand as a missionary there, I really was stretched out. But God can give us wisdom in regard to family and ministry and job and so forth. All right. Some people say, well, you know, God's first, family second. You see, there's a church or job that's next. Let me see. So I get confused. I can't do that, really. Of course God's first. But some of the things that I can do, Troy, the most wonderful thing I can do by putting God first is to get out there and bend my back and lay some brick and make some money for my kids' shoes and their education and give some to missionaries and pay the preacher. That's spiritual, boy. Whatsoever you do, do it heartily to the Lord and not unto men, knowing that of the Lord ye shall receive the reward of the inheritance, for ye serve the Lord Christ every brick you lay. Preaching isn't more spiritual than laying brick. Laying brick ain't more spiritual than an electrician, although bricklayers think it is. You see? I can't say that. I can't say that. And I'm in the middle of a job and one of the kids gets sick and have to go to the emergency, and then all of a sudden the family's first, right? And the boss said, sure, go ahead, John. So I dash off and we get an ambulance and take the kid to the hospital. The family gets first. No, I don't think you can say God's always first and the family's always second and the job's always third and the church is always fourth. I think it moves around. Now, in the back of my mind, I have priorities, obviously. But I have priorities when? Come 10 o'clock at night, my priority is to lay down in a prone position, reasonably quiet. That's my high priority. You know? That's right. And my high priority is to be sure that I really fight to get that 8 or 8.5 hours sleep. I get 8 and a half hours sleep. And when I have a ministry or a responsibility at night or go pheasant hunting or duck hunting and up all night, I try to sleep in the next day. Why? Because I don't want to get a cold and I don't have anything to prove. I just want to be a sharp threshing instrument having teeth day after day after day after day. And I don't want to lose 4 or 5 days but trying to prove something. Follow that, John? See? Just use my head. Mama used to say, son, use your brains. It's the little things in life that count. Any questions on that? Any questions on priority, job, and so forth? Now, I was talking to a young man in Fayetteville over last weekend. He said, "John, all I want is just a job for my family, just enough to make a living and roof over my head and serve God." I said, "You're going to be a pauper by the time you're 45 years old. You're about 28, 26. I said, "Man, if you don't get on top of your career, the way inflation is going, you know what it's going to cost 17 years from now to send a kid to a private university like Wheaton College?
50 grand.
Or, pardon me?
50 grand.
$33,000 a year. A year. See? His kids aren't going to be able to go. See? And he may not even go to a state school the way things are going. See, no, you've got to get on with that career. You've got to get on with that job. You've got to get on with a saving program. You know, if you save $25 a month from 22 to 32, my boy gave me a little calculator the other day with these programs on it, and I'm so proud of that. I don't know what to do. And $25 a month from 22 to 32, in higher mathematics, that's $300 a year. That's $3,000. Put that in the bank at 9%. And Colorado Gas will pay you 9%. You've been paying it for years and years and years and years and years. When you're 65 years old, you can draw $600 a month forever and ever and ever and ever and ever and ever again. If you wait till you're 40 years old and save $50 a month for 25 years, 40 to 65, you will have saved $15,000. But you'll only draw $400 a month forever and ever and ever and ever and ever and ever. See? So getting on top of things, of your saving, paying off your house, your career, when you're young, absolutely will pay off. And adapt your lifestyle, cut your shirt to fit the cloth. And don't believe the lies that the world, like, you got to have yours now. If you can afford it now, great. But borrowing money now will obligate your future. And you'll be an old person, and you won't make it for the long haul, because you're going to have to be raking leaves and doing yard work to make things up to you. And of course, in Oklahoma City, you can do all right making leaves, making yard work. A lot of people can't get that done. Any questions on that? Obviously, we're not going to get through these, huh? How do I work with my mate to stay excited about the long haul as a team? Well, I don't know if this is a fellow or girl, because I can't read writing like that. But I wish you could come over to my house for dinner and have some time with my wife around the table. She could sure help you. Because she really knows how to have a happy husband. She really does. But I'm working also with her in regard for the long haul. And I've stopped doing things now that I used to do. I may have made some mistakes. Imagine that. Isn't that beautiful? Mm-hmm. Well, at least I come that close. May have made some mistakes. when I went to New Zealand, I decided to rent furnished houses. And the Kiwis, they call themselves Kiwis, they travel a lot. They go overseas. It's a little island nation. You got to go somewhere, you know. So they go to Europe and go to Australia and go a lot of places. They're quite affluent, have their money. So we rented houses, but we had to move a lot. And so during the first 3.5 years we were there, we moved 7 times. The first year we were married, we lived at Colorado, and we moved 7 times the first year. We counted up the other day, 35 years of marriage, we moved 21 times. You know, I think if I had to go over again, I'd reduce that a little bit. Maybe 20, not 21. It takes about a month to move, you see. So I really feel that I've asked too much. See, I really feel I've asked too much. Now, she's in good health, and she's fine. We're getting along fine. But with that background, I'm working awful hard now to free her up. I really am. And I had to talk her in the other day or some time ago about getting a girl to come over once a week. And we do. We have the most gorgeous girl you ever saw. Sue comes over, and she can clean that house, and she decorates it and so on. Because I have a prayer partner. Mom spends a lot of time in prayer. And at her age, at 60, she wakes up at night, and so she gets up at night and prays. And then you can't stay up. I mean, she's not an iron woman. You've got to have more sleep than anybody else. But she's got to have a nap in the daytime, see? Well, how can she have a nap in the daytime? She's got to read my 8 billion letters and do my chores, see? So I've really been trying to work on freeing her up. Maybe a little late. But look, make it as easy on your mate as possible. Now, if I was working with old John Graham here, I'd put old John to the grind, boy. We'd do our push-ups and our calisthenics and our verses and what have you, see? But I would not put John's wife to the grind. And I would eat John's lunch if he put his wife to the grind. She is not in a training program. My wife is not in a training program. And so I lighten the load there. And I find I get much more mileage by lightening the load than I do by laying on that burden that neither you nor your fathers could bear. That's a verse of Scripture too, you know. Any questions there, Tom? Yes.
Isn't the basic answer to that question, though, the fact that you and your Aunt Helen have spent a great deal of time making sure that you have the same goals in life?
Willis, that's exactly right. Thank you. The idea is that Helen and I have spent a lot of time being sure that we have the same goals in life. And maybe that's the answer to this question. How do I work with my mate to be excited about the long haul? To have the same goals in life. I had a sister and her husband. They're both with the Lord now. And we were children, and she was a little older than me, so she got married. And they're both friendship, spendthrifts, and kept the shabbiest house. And the rest of us children would criticize. One time, Mom got us at the table and said, "Children, I want no more of this criticizing of your sister. She and her husband are alike. They both spend what they make and more than they make, and they both keep a shabby house. That is their business, and they like it, and they are together, and it's none of our business. So let's lay off, you see." And they were just as happy as they could be. All of their life, they were together. Things were strewn around everywhere. It'd drive me up the wall. But they were together. They were together, and they were happy, and it wasn't any of our business. So I think that's good. You've got to be together, or pray that you're together. And we fellas, be sure that you make the issues of the right things, or don't make issues of the wrong things, one or the other. I mean, okay, so you think the kitchen should be painted pale blue, and your wife would like cream. 5 years from now, you won't know what it is, you know? I mean, is it really worth it, you know? My job is increasing, more demanding. God seems to be blessing their opportunity to share Christ often. I have a ministry with a family of five. It is becoming more difficult to get time and important things like taking my kids, wife, neighbors, talking and taking any suggestions. Well, you better do something with those wife and kids. Again, back to the seasons now. You're not going to have them very long. You got to believe me. It ain't long. You say, "John, my little old kids, it seems like it's going to last forever." I know it does, but it won't. And you'll get rid of those smelly diapers one of these old days. You really will. It just won't be that long. It will be that long, I'm telling you. I can almost count the times I took my boy shooting, you know. 137. Not really. So, Tuesday at 5:03, the most important thing in the world was World Series. At 5:04, it was the least important thing in the world. 60 seconds. It can happen. It really can happen. Your priorities can change. Whole nations can change. I watched a whole nation change. I was shore patrol in San Francisco on VJ Day in August. Things were going along line, and I'd pull shore patrol on Market Street. And VJ Day came, and within 2 or 3 hours, the whole world was in an uproar, and people were drinking whiskey and what, and going down to women, going down the street and kissing every woman that was there. I mean, literally, everybody was hugging and shouting. There's one lady down on the statue as naked as a jaybird, and the whole country went wild, and it went wild in hours. I was in the Oakland side of the bay in 1963 when John Kennedy was shot, and the whole country dropped to its knees. You remember? And for 3 days, they didn't play anything but hymns and Beethoven and Bach on the radio. You see, things can change awful fast. Your priorities can change, you know? How do you sustain your spiritual growth through the tough times? That's when you really grow through your tough times. When you are alone and to still grow. I love to sustain growth. How do you sustain growth, not plateau or level off? Well, if you're walking with the Lord, you make application, and then you can sustain growth. And if you're walking with the Lord, you're catching some incoming. That's a military term in battle. You see, you look on television, you see these bang, 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 bang. That's the war in Lebanon. You don't know if that's the war in Lebanon, if that's a Hollywood script or some tape that they're playing. You don't know. But if they're catching incoming, you know that's a war. When you're catching incoming, when the artillery is coming in and you're catching a little shrapnel, when you catch an incoming, you know that the enemy knows where you are. And he's got you pinpointed. And you better take some action. Well, it's both good and bad. One is that you're in line of the enemy. Secondly, you're in the war. And you're fighting for God. You're a soldier. One definition of a soldier is he's a threat to the enemy. And Helen and I are taking a little incoming, and so we know we're in a war. So we know where it is. And sometime we'll go over the world, the flesh, and the devil. There's a battle of the world, and then there's a battle of the flesh, and there's a battle of the devil. And I think it's in that way. In your early years of Christian life, you have more fights with the world, and then you have more fights with the flesh, or vice versa. And then the devil. I think the devil comes last. So that's the way you keep from leveling off. You keep at your basics, and you keep walking with the Lord, and He'll see to it. What can I do right now that will prepare me for keeping Christ first when I'm older? Role model. In other words, what struggles are ahead? Are they always basically the same? 6:33, for instance. Seek ye first the kingdom of God and His righteousness, and all these things shall be added unto you. No, they vary a little. I think a fella that practices discipline over the flesh, over lust, over women, I think if he practices it long enough, it never will go away. But he can get on top of it so that he's not bothered all that much, like a young man. You know? I think he can begin to make progress. He'll always have that same problem, but it won't be devastating like it is with the sins of our youth. You know, there's a lot in the Bible that says, "Oh, God, forgive me for the sins of my youth." There's useful sins that plague us. As we begin to grow and begin to get victory over the flesh and get victory over things such as, boy, I sure would like some new drapes, and everybody else has got carpets, and man, this old raggedy car, and I've torn my skirt on it 3 times now, and so on and so on. As we begin to get victory over those things, then we begin to start fighting spiritual sins. Bitterness, or I'm not being counted, or the children haven't. See, old grandparents, they fight. The children haven't called. You know? And the kids should call the clowns. They really should. But they get busy with their work and they don't call. And these old people get bitter and they remember it. You know? He didn't call birthday and he didn't call Christmas and he didn't call Easter. He don't love me. See? Well, I realize he should have called. She should have called. I realize that. But old people have to watch those things of bitterness. You see, Jesus is all we really need. He really is all we need. For in him dwelleth all the fullness of the Godhead bodily, and ye are complete in him, which is ahead of all principality and power. Now, I appreciate having my lovely wife. I appreciate having my mate, Harold and Sally Harper, that I do Bible studying with, and we shoot squirrels and pheasants together and work in the ministry together. I appreciate all of these things. I appreciate you. I appreciate you. I appreciate working with you and fellowshipping with you. I really do. But Jesus is all I really need. And so if you do let me down, it really shouldn't affect me because I am sustained from him. I should be. In the latter part, well, 2 Peter chapter 1, about 12, it says, if you do these things, you shall never fall. And the things that are listed in verses 5 through 7, add to your faith, virtue, to virtue, knowledge, and knowledge, temperance, temperance, patience, patience, godliness, brotherly kindness. For if these things be in you and abound, they make you that ye should neither be barren nor unfruitful. But he that lacketh these things is blind and can't see very far and has forgotten that he was purged from his old sins. So when something comes that you know that it's a problem, deal with it. When bitterness starts coming in, when a situation between you and friend wife or vice versa starts coming in, deal with that situation and get on top of it and don't let it beget to be a mountain. And that's what these people did. You take these the evangelists and what have you. All of a sudden a fella didn't find himself in a motel room with some strange woman. That didn't happen all of a sudden. Translated into Japanese, hagawashi. Hogwash. That situation had been going on a long time. And the Holy Spirit of God had been working with him. If you've stolen something or you know, if you're... expense account is not proper, God will tell you. He will show you how to live honestly. He really will. And those are the things that begin to eat away. Any? Break in now. I'm going to move right on. Question? Sir? First chapter of 2 Peter. First chapter of 2 Peter, about 12. But 5 through 7 is the things that he said, if you do these things, you shall never fall. And the things are listed in 5 through 7. How do you keep your first love for God? Well, one way you keep it is don't lose it. You know. Keep in the Word. Don't be afraid to be corrected. Don't make such a big deal out of it when you goof or are corrected. I mean, you know, the world hadn't come to an end. God hasn't died when you fouled up. My son, Proverbs verse 6, verse 20. My son, keep thy father's commandments and forsake not the law of thy mother. Bind them continually upon thine heart and tie them about thy neck. Talking about the commandments. Verse 22, Proverbs 6. When thou goest, it shall lead thee. When thou sleepest, it shall keep thee. When thou awakest, it shall talk with thee. Listen. For the commandment is a lamp, and the law is light, and reproofs of instruction are the way of life. Have you apologized this week? No. I haven't, John. Then you didn't do anything. You need to apologize. I guess not. Congratulations. Are we living such calloused lives that we are not even prompted to apologize See? You know? I think we should probably feel good when we're prompted to apologize. Troy, I'm sorry. It was a sin of neglect, and I'm sorry. I should have known better. I should have written you a note. I'm sorry. See? Just apologize. Or, honey, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. See? Just apologize. God, I'm sorry. I repent. Lord, I really am sorry. See? Just repent. That's all. That's all. And if you're not apologizing, maybe you're living pretty close, or maybe you're not living close enough, that the tenderness. Reproofs of instruction are the way of life. Reproofs of instruction are the way of life. A fellow come by and he said, "Mr. Crawford, you've been complaining that your hedges are too high and people can't see around the corner. Who was it?" "You, Mr. Crawford, I don't know, really. People can come in and call in and complain about your hedges being too high, and they don't have to give their name." And I thought, munch crumbs, munch neighbors. Then I went out, and sure enough, and I began to think, it would be terrible if my hedges were so high and somebody come around and had a wreck. And I asked God to forgive me, and of course the guy was gone all that by that time, you know. I couldn't ask him. I cut the hedges down, you know. But the very idea of coming around telling me, a gardener, or boy, my hedges too high, see. You know, do you fight those kind of battles? Reproofs of instruction are the way of life. When you gals are cooking and friend husband comes by and Mike makes a suggestion, do you have the idea, do you want to cook this meal or don't you? Or maybe you don't cook. Maybe you don't cook, maybe you go out. 1st love. How do you keep your relationship with God fresh after many years of service? I think we've covered that pretty good. If you can't do all of the word and prayer disciplines, how do you determine which is essential? Ha, that's very good. If you can't eat your entire meal, what would you do about it, Troy?
You'd eat things that will probably that you like the best.
Or you'd eat a little bit of it, wouldn't you?
A little bit of it.
Yeah. If you couldn't do it all, you'd do a little. If you can't work all day, you're not gonna work at all? No, you work a little bit. See? If you can't do it all, do some. If you can't pray a lot, pray a little. If you can't read a lot, read a little. If you can't review a lot, review a little. And then ask the Lord to help you. And then, but make some changes in your schedule. One of the things that would change our schedule is what they call tele, TV. That is, except ball games, that's out. Don't you? Isn't that beautiful? What can practically help me to make the most of my time with God? The skills that you can learn in workshops. How do I know that? How do I do this without selfish about it, Christ-centered instead of self-centered? Well, until you learn how, don't worry about being selfish. Just do it. You know, if you're supposed to do something, do it. And then work on your attitude. Do it first. While you're working on your attitude, get it done. Where can I serve the Lord? Where is His will? Well, you serve the Lord where you are. Right where you are with the people that God has put you with right now. And that's His will. I can give you verse after verse. Building and maintaining a lasting confidence in God. Cast not away therefore your confidence, which hath great recompense of reward. Confidence is in asking God and walking with God and seeing God answer your prayer. Then He gives you confidence. I've been a Christian for 12 years, but still have the same problem with a certain sin. In the long haul, can I overcome this sin? Yes, you can overcome that sin. Jesus Christ, His Son, cleanses us from all the sins except the one you have. You know that verse? Jesus Christ, His Son, cleanses us from all sin. Now, prayed, Father, forgive me. And if you'll forgive me, I'll become an evangelist. That's what he said in Psalm 51. Men shall be converted unto thee, King James. So David was called a man after God's own heart. But David took another man's wife and had this man murdered. In heaven, that's not going to cost him. But on earth, that cost him. The law calls for repaying fourfold. You remember Zacchaeus, the little guy up the sycamore tree? He said, Lord, if I've sinned against anybody, I'll repay them fourfold. Well, that was what the law called for. If you stole a cow, you had to give four cows back or the equivalent thereof when caught. David took a man's life. He paid for it with four of his sons murdered. David took another man's wife. He paid for it by losing all of his concubines. In this life, there's a cause and effect that's immutable. The freeway fell because it wasn't strong enough to hold it up. Oh, but I hope it didn't fail. I didn't mean to. No one stole any money. Well, it's either strong or it's not strong. Now, you've got to accept that. That's a cause and effect in this life. You pay for it in this life. But in the other life, it's all gone. But we can get forgiveness. And we can walk in victory. Now, you might need more help than I'm giving you tomorrow. If there is one most important thing that will determine how to make it for the long haul, what do you believe it is? Well, I don't know that I could say one thing, but I would say two or three, half a dozen at the most. The reason I say two or three, see, there's only two commandments, basically. Love God with all your heart and all your soul and mind. Love your neighbor as yourself. On these two commandments hang all the law and all the prophets. 10:42 in Luke. Jesus Christ said this statement, only a few things are really needed, maybe only one. Now imagine the creator of the universe saying, just a few things are really needed, maybe only one. How about that? Boy, that's narrowing down, ain't it? That's called outlining it and condensing it. And Mary has chosen the best part. You must not tear it away from her. And what Mary had chosen was sitting at Jesus' feet and hearing his word. So the few things would be sitting at Jesus' feet and hearing his word, making application like Mary, loving your neighbor as yourself, and putting God first. There's a few more that might be good, but those would be dropped. How did you make it so far? Well, not very well. Is it possible for me to do the same? Of course. In much better shape. What is the necessary motivation or mindset to make it on the long haul? The same motivation, mindset to start. The love of Jesus Christ, and you walk with Jesus Christ. See? In this afternoon session, we're going into the gospel, where the gospel is the payment of the penalty of sin, it's the payment of the victory over sin, and it's provision for the removal from the very presence of sin. And the second part is where we need to work. And most of the churches that I've been to, particularly the Baptist churches that I go to, don't deal strongly enough, as far as I'm concerned, on the second part of the salvation. The first part, you're saved, you have your asbestos suit, you won't go to hell. But we're saved for other reasons. Well, we're going into this afternoon. We can bring back in asbestos, can't we? Christian will always persevere, continue for the long haul. But isn't it true that real Christians can start well but finish carnally? They sure can. They absolutely sure can. In fact, Paul gave his whole life trying to get people to finish well. And shouldn't all of us therefore seek to endure, not take the spiritual vitality for granted? Yes, we should. But the same power that gives a little baby and gives him into birth is the same power that makes him into a young man and a football player, is the same power that makes him into a businessman, is the same power that sustains him. And so it is spiritually. It's so it is. Just don't quit. This five key finishing well for the long haul. Well, I've given you a couple. How do you prevent the Bible from getting boring? Well, the full soul loatheth the honeycomb, but to the hungry soul every bitter thing is sweet. Get you another translation and read it. Be easy on yourself. Try to get some quiet time when the kids and all that kind of stuff isn't pressing in on you, and just start reading in a different translation in a quiet time, like on Sunday afternoon, and ask God to feed you, and He will. Oftentimes I get frustrated and I get things and I think, why am I doing this? And I say, you know, John, you're doing some things wrong. And so I go around the block, I leave my offices in my house, and I start walking around the block and I begin to review to God where I am and what I've done wrong. And I say, now, Lord, I know I've made these mistakes. Now, Lord, brighten my soul and refresh me. And I begin to quote verses and I have a 2-mile walk. And usually by the time I get back to the house, I'm in good shape. Just talking to the Lord and asking Him to refresh me. See, being honest with Him. I know it well and believe it sometimes gets boring. How do you prevent Bible burnout? Okay. Obey what you know. That's a good key. Two more and we go. Three more. How do I get through the times when there seems tough and Satan tries to make them believe God is no longer in control? Well, I think we've covered most of that. What do you think about burnout? Well, I think it's quite possible. How do you feel joyful when daily problems keep hitting you day after day? Sometimes you feel like you are overcome. Get some help. Not necessarily professional help, but get some help, because the person that wrote that needs some help, not some counseling, but some help from some of us, and begin to make some progress. How do you prevent... we're working with a young lady, and this young lady told Helen the other day, she says, this has been the best year of my life for my husband and me. She has 2 children. She's a middle, 30s. And she told Helen, she said, you know, Helen, I've learned it from watching you, the way you relate to John. So it can be done. How do you prevent yourself from becoming, as some elder people, better and stubborn and cynical? Well, you shouldn't do that. Why do many people seem to drift? Well, all we like sheep have gone astray. We drift. That's one way we get off. We just drift. Sheep, they'll just wander off and get in the briar patch and get stuck or get in the bog. And once they get in the bog and get him out, and then they get back in the bog again. You already hear my boy tell stories about getting sheep out of the bog. Burnout, it's possible, but it shouldn't be necessary. Folks, I ran over. Thank you for being very patient and kind.